In today's episode of Movie Rollers, we review the new movie Looper and Tim Burton's spiritual sequel to The Corpse Bride and The Nightmare Before Christmas, the movie Frankenweenie. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Good evening, good evening, good evening.
Hello, hello, hello.
Greetings, greetings, greetings.
So hopefully this will be a bit of a happier episode. I think our last movie, we blasted everything that we had reviewed. Went back down, taken to Bachelorette. None of them really got our thumbs up. So I'm got my fingers crossed that we're going to have some nice things to say today.
I don't know, because this is Joe alone doing Frankenweenie, a Tim Burton, and you're not a Tim Burton fan.
Yeah, we'll come to that. All will be revealed, let's put it that way.
Or maybe we could go back in time, change things. I'm referring to Looper.
That's a very good segue. So Looper is a futuristic action thriller. It's all about time travel, where the premise is that time travel will be invented but become illegal very quickly. It becomes only available on the black market, and when somebody wants to get rid of somebody, they send their target 30 years into the past, where a Looper, which is a hired gun, will blast away the bad guy. So Looper's essentially lived this life of assassinating people. Everything is good for these guys, but one of the consequences that they are forced to deal with is that at some point, one of the people sent back in time will be themselves, and then they will ultimately live a life knowing that their future is limited. The movie's directed by Rian Johnson. This is his third movie, I believe. He's very well known for a couple of movies, the movie Brick and The Brothers Bloom, both of which I think were very well received. I wasn't a huge fan of Brick. I think, Rashmi, you felt the same way. But Yazdi, I think you liked that one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Movie stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, Emily Blunt, Paul Dano, an appearance by Jeff Daniels. So a great cast here. Yazdi, what do you think of Looper?
So how much time do you have? I can talk about this movie for hours. First of all, I'm going to start off by saying this is a lot of film. I don't know where to begin. I mean, this is a work of obsessive intelligence, right? I mean, this movie is 10 things at once. And really, I can literally talk about this for hours. I'll just start with this point. You know, the movie starts with this premise, which is, you know, we're always told in literature, in movies about time travel, that with linear time travel, the same person cannot exist in two different times at the same point. Well, this movie says, well, what if that were possible? What if your 30-year-old self from the future came up and you were actually able to coexist with them and they wouldn't immediately unravel the space-time continuum? And it takes this concept and then kind of goes back and forth and all around and kind of shimmies over on the side and does all these other things. And somehow, funnily, it barely fits together. So, you know, it's one of those ambitious, probing, challenging films. You know, I admire those. And I think this movie is all three of those.
So you liked it?
I respect the movie. I don't know if I liked it. And I'll come back to that later.
Okay, so here's an example of a film where I love the concept. I love time travel movies. And I couldn't wait to see this movie. And then I went and it was just okay. I spent most of my time trying to understand what was going on in the hope that it would actually come together in the end. And unfortunately for me, it didn't.
So I've had the benefit of watching this movie twice. I went once to the screening with Yazdi, and then because Rashmi was out of town, I went to see it again with her this weekend, just gone when
because
it opened.
Because I so wanted to see it.
Here's something that I never thought I would hear myself say, but the movie is actually better on second viewing. Like you said, Yazdi, there is a lot of movie here. The plot itself is very dense, and I think in many ways it was not the movie that I was expecting when I sat down. So seeing it the second time round without that expectation, with a better understanding of what the movie actually is, I appreciated it so much more the second time round that the movie was at least 2 points better on our 10-point scale on second viewing. You know, I guess we all need a time machine for this one, because it really does require that, in my mind, that level of viewing.
Yeah, I mean, I actually know what both of you are saying. I mean, like you, Rashmi, I mean, this movie, at many times as I was watching it, gave me a Inception vibe. The movie's almost too smart for itself. It's doing all these somersaults back and forth. But still, I kind of respected that somebody right now is doing something which is so off-kilter. And this is a very off-kilter movie. And I fully agree with what you said, Joe. This movie actually turns out to be very different than anything anybody might have expected, even having seen the previews 100 yep. times.
See, it's interesting that you say that. I mean, I, like I said at the beginning, I love time travel movies, but for me, it lacked sophistication. And when I compare it to films like Back to the Future or Terminator, they just seem more elegant in the way that they're put together. This seemed like a one-theme movie where it just felt like people are sent back to the past to be shot. And I think I wanted more. And there were hints of more, but it didn't quite get to the moral essence of those questions related to time travel that you alluded to right at the beginning.
See, that's where I think watching it a second time really helped me. The movie is incredibly dense in terms of how it plays out its plot. And at the beginning of the movie, on my first watching, there was a couple of lines of dialogue that were absolutely critical to understanding what was going on. And they were kind of buried in what was happening. And on second viewing, it just opened my eyes in a way that I didn't have on the first watch. Mm. So if you miss a line of dialogue here, and the dialogue is actually quite spare. I mean, every single line, I think, has been well-crafted and advances the plot here. So the movie doesn't have very much exposition in it. And if you miss any line of dialogue, some key scenes won't make sense. Second time round, you appreciate everything that's happening to a completely different level. Like, there's a scene, you know, where he's hanging off a balcony, mm-hmm. and there's a sound that happens just before that that you don't notice first time round, and you don't really understand the significance of that. But because it is a time travel movie and we revisit scenes a couple of times as the scene plays out, on first viewing, you kind of catch stuff that you didn't really know was coming. So, you know, it's a very clever movie, and it's so densely scripted that it requires 110% attention. And Yazdi, I think I know what you're saying in terms of the Inception experience. It is very much like that. The movie maker here demands your attention. He insists that you stay awake through every nanosecond of this movie.
So not one to see when you're jet lagged,
no,
I guess.
No, not at
that
all.
That was the problem.
It wouldn't be a worse movie to watch in a jet lagged, sleepy state.
Yeah, I actually think, unlike you, Rashmi, that this movie actually, it has so many, this is a movie of many, many, many ideas, to the extent that it just is not able to do justice to any of them. I mean, one of the things I admired about the movie grudgingly is the structure of the film, or actually the complete lack thereof. I mean, this movie is nothing close to the traditional structure of a movie. I mean, right. There is no structure to the movie. You know, it kind of zigs back and forth in time. At sometimes it's this dystopian sci-fi movie like Blade Runner. At other times it's like a full-out action movie where the hero is like decimating tens of people with his machine gun. At other times it's a Western. I mean, there's a whole part of the movie where it's a bloody Western. And then, you know, at other times it's like a superhero movies with telekinetic powers that people have. So it's a lot of things which are thrown in together.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, one of the reviewers, I think it was Richard Roper, who said this movie would have actually made a great A-rate television series on HBO or Showtime, where it could have slowly taken its time and gone from one thing to the other.
Or even a trilogy.
And so I think every point in time, there is an opportunity for a lot of philosophical musings, and it kind of doesn't have the time for it because it's so, you know, breathless, except for a piece kind of in the middle of the movie where Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis sit down in this diner, and they're the same character separated by 30 years. And I like that part because they almost, you know, and there's different ways you can play this, and I like the way it's played. It's played very offhanded, banal, not philosophical at all. So I, you know, I admire what's being done here. Like, this is somebody who is very, very intent on doing things differently, and you know, I'm glad that movies like that are being made.
So I think the and I understand what you're saying, and great points about the fact that maybe if this was a trilogy, maybe if this was a TV program, it would have been better. And definitely, I think, don't watch this when you're sleepy or jet lagged like I was. But I think even then, good movies are good movies. And I think the thing I missed here was it felt like there was little emotion and I cared less for most of the characters. Good time travel movies need you to care about people. And for me, this was a bit too much action and killing versus exploring the good science fiction concept. But again, I acknowledge the points you made, Joe.
And I think good movies require you to care about people, period, not just good time travel movies. I found there was a lot for me to care for here. I really did empathize with the Bruce Willis character for what he was trying to achieve. I understood Gordon Levitt's motives. That character, I think, was very clear to me. Emily Blunt had a terrific role here. And again, her motives were very understandable. And so in many ways, it was all a bit of a mess. And I was trying to root for all of them. And, you know, I was invested in all of their outcomes. I think the movie quite cleverly wrapped everything up at the end in a way that made perfect sense and was just really the best outcome one could have hoped for given the situation. So, I mean, yeah. I thought that whole emotional side worked, but it did work more the second time when right. I wasn't so busy trying to figure out and understand what was going on, because that first viewing was confusing. Confusing is probably the best word for it.
I think you were right. Emily Blunt was excellent in this film, and I really liked her performance, as was the little kid who played her son. I think his name's Pierce Gagnon. He was incredible. I agree with you. I think she was good.
I really liked, I mean, really, the most of the movies, every part of the movie is different, but I really liked the early part of the movie, which plays with the sci-fi concepts, and I liked the energy within it. You know, I liked all the action scenes in the early part of the movie, which is set in the future. There's a cleverness and there's a mischievousness to the action even. I had a smile on my face while I was watching it. The one thing about the movie which I'm surprised has not been more controversial politically, I think that this movie is making a political stance, or maybe I'm just seeing it that way, is the movie brings up this whole concept of preemptive strike. And I think Roger Ebert is the only one who wrote a blog article about it after he saw the movie. And his point was, well, if you knew that, you know, would you kill Hitler as a child if you knew that, you know, Hitler was going to grow up and do what he did? You know, is it morally justified to kill somebody before they do something bad? And there's a lot of very bad killings that happen based on this premise. And the Hindu mythology has this, you know, when Krishna was born, the king ordered every child born on that day to be killed. And, you know, this movie, it starts off about time travel action heroes, about people who go and kill assassins, finally kind of drifts into this moral question about, you know, whether it's right to kill somebody before they've actually done something wrong.
See totally so missed that figure. Point. Totally missed that point.
No, I got that. I mean, that's the great time travel conundrum. You know, that's been brought up many times whenever you think about time travel philosophically. Would you go back and take out Hitler, and what the consequences of that, you know, would be? So yeah, I think this movie did deal with that, and I didn't find it disturbing, I think, until you mention it now. But now that I think about it, especially given the potential target that this movie would have made of that, it is a little unnerving, I guess. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But again, that only adds to the movie for me, now that I'm thinking about that in a philosophical way. And again, I hope that's, I don't think we've given any spoilers away here, but it is a deeper movie now that you kind of look at it that way.
Okay, to bring us back to the lighthearted part of the discussion, I think the other thing that I had real problems with was Gordon Levitt's makeup. In an effort to make him look like Bruce Willis, I felt like there was so much makeup caked on his face that I couldn't see him acting. And it really, really distracted me.
I loved it. I loved it. I mean, I didn't see it as makeup. I saw it as either CGI or prosthetics or something. But, you know, that, yeah, he looks. And actually, there's a lot which has gone into making him behave even like Bruce Willis. So, it was just one more ball that was thrown in the air amongst all the other balls which were afloat, in my opinion.
It bothered me to start with because Gordon Levitt's an actor that we've seen a lot of lately, and he didn't look like himself.
Exactly.
Here, so
I think it
bothered me initially, but ultimately, I'm just glad they didn't take a young guy and try and make him look like an old guy, or take an old guy and make him look like a young guy. The fact that they chose two very good, well-known, accomplished actors to take on these parts, I think, was a brave choice. And, you know, yeah, the makeup was a little distracting to start with, but as soon as I got into the plot of the movie, I kind of ignored it.
I was distracted by the drawn-on eyebrows.
Were they drawn on? Oh,
they just looked like thick pieces of tape or something strange.
I've gushed about the movie extensively. I mean, I did have one nitpick, and that was the overall production design. I felt like this was just filmed in a disused factory somewhere outside of Flint, Michigan. I didn't feel like I was in the future. I didn't feel like they had a very good vision for what the future might be. It was this dystopian look. But, you know, if it had the kind of production design that we saw in this year's Total Recall, I think I would have really bought the whole futuristicness of it a lot more. It's just this future was an ugly future, and even the utopian future of China, as they had portrayed in the movie, didn't really look. I was not convinced that we were watching anything other than the movie that was made and set in 2012.
Agree.
I did. There were a few touches. I agree. And again, I've been thinking a lot about this movie. I don't know why. And I think maybe that's a measure of its success. But one of the things the whole concept of Looper, I'm wondering if the movie's trying to make a point that unless you're able to, you know, get past your emotional and material addictions, you're bound to keep going back and through time again and again and again. And in that respect, he sees the future not too different from the way we live right now. And he's almost seeing that, you know, unless we do better as human beings, maybe we won't get better. I don't know if I'm reaching too far with that, but
you're so philosophical tonight, Yazdi. I'm blown away. I want to watch the movie in your head rather than the one I watched.
Well, we're going on like 20 minutes talking about this movie here. So why don't we wrap it up with scores? Rashmi?
Don't get caught in a loop watching this one. Wait until it comes out on DVD. Then you can rewind it and watch it again. Rewind it and watch it again. Rewind it and watch it again. Rewind it. I'm going to give this one a 6 out of 10.
We get it. Yazdi?
I like these kinds of movies. I mean, this is a film with very weighty ideas and a lot of ambition, but it's also, I think, at the most, you know, fundamental level, a fine sci-fi action film with just a bit of the Western thrown in. I greatly, greatly admire its cold intelligence, but I have to admit I never developed a warm affection for it. And for that reason alone, I think it falls short of a 9 out of 10, but I will give it an 8 out of 10. I liked it that much, almost an 8.5. It's approaching 8.5. I really liked where it goes.
Oh, I like how that half was disguised as a 0.5.
Yeah, I mean, clearly this movie's had a lot of work put into it. The script is genuinely clever, and I've been thinking about it like you, Yazdi. Unlike Men in Black 3, which completely squandered its time travel mechanic, Rian Johnson here made amazing use of it. You know, there wasn't lots of hopping back and forth. It was quite the opposite, but it really used the whole time travel mechanic very well. So on first viewing, I came out a little confused by it all, a little underwhelmed by it all, but it brewed in my mind such that when Rashmi said she wanted to see it, I was like, sure, absolutely, let's go see this. On second viewing, this movie comes out and it does make a 9 for me. I'm really genuinely surprised by that, given the way that I felt the first time I watched it, but it's genuinely clever. It's a great piece of work, and I think it's a future classic.
Wow.
Yeah, and maybe I need to see it again to get that emotional connection, because I never got an emotional connection with the movie, and that's what keeps me from calling it a flat-out classic. But yeah.
Maybe I'll go with you again then, Yazdi.
And just one final point about the movie's structure. I mean, you said, Yazdi, it was atypical. It absolutely was. I mean, you know, it had extremely long second act, extremely almost slow second act. And it's only in the second viewing that you kind of appreciate what was going on there emotionally with all of the characters. The final act was like 5 minutes. I mean, it just happened, boom, gone, done. Really, really unusual and very clever stuff. All right. Our next movie then is Frankenweenie. And I think, Rashmi, you're going to tell us all about this.
I am. So Frankenweenie is this year's 3D black and white stop motion science fiction comedy horror film directed by the great Tim Burton. It's a remake of Burton's 1984 short film of the same name and is a parody and a homage to the 1931 film Frankenstein, of course based on Mary Shelley's book of the same name. In this film, a boy named Victor loses his dog named Sparky and uses the power of science to resurrect him. It's the first black and white feature film and the first stop motion film to be released in IMAX 3D. This is directed by Tim Burton and written by Burton and John August and stars Winona Ryder, Martin Short, Catherine O'Hara, Martin Landau, and others. So, Joe, like I said, you're the only one that saw this, and I know your, need I say it, hate for Tim Burton as a director. I'm really interested to see what you think about this, especially because I know you're a dog lover as well.
And Yazdi, you haven't seen this one yet, have you?
No, but before you say anything, we must hold for the record that Joe did soften up to Tim Burton when he saw Dark Shadows.
Oh, so that's
maybe,
true.
Maybe this
that's
is the conversion
true.
Of Joe.
That's true.
Well, I mean, the first thing I have to say is, you bastards, the pair of you. You know how I feel about Tim Burton movies, and yet you abandoned me for the screening. And I know you had your reasons and whatever, but you sent me to this movie on my own, knowing full well that this was going to be a difficult time for me. And to that, I kind of say poo to you because you missed a cracker.
Really?
I knew it.
Wow.
No, I mean, this was not an amazing movie. This was just a very charming, cute movie. I think it had a wonderful black and white 3D art style. You know, Tim Burton does this kind of stuff very well here in 3D. And given the stylistic choice to go black and white this time, it had this wonderful little texture to it. I mean, everything felt a little claustrophobic because it was in 3D, and I think there's like field of view problems with those cameras, but everything just had this like wonderful charm. It was a very simple narrative, and it's based around Frankenstein, the boy who loses his dog in a car accident and then kind of revives it, you know, with lightning and that kind of thing. But there's some really nice aspects to this movie, and one of the high points for me is at least the boy and the dog's relationship. It was very much like Toothless in How to Train Your Dragon. Aww. That kind of connection that the boy has with his dog, and the cuteness of his dog, and the devastation that he suffers when that dog is killed. And so you genuinely believe that this, you know, little bright spark, oddball, quirky little boy who's not really got a lot of friends, you know, will go to any lengths to revive his best friend
in the mirror.
So it was. I mean, it was extremely well done. And I think I just enjoyed the beauty of that relationship more than anything. There were lessons to be learned. And obviously, you know, the movie makes a difficult transition towards the end. But it was just a very nicely done movie. What can I say?
Wow. Did you cry?
I didn't cry. It didn't move me to tears because it wasn't, I think, it didn't have a high, it was not a high amplitude emotional movie, you know. It didn't have big highs and big lows. It just, you know, but you felt for the characters, you understood their motives, and it was just a beautiful art style here. And I think Tim Burton without color is perhaps the Tim Burton I like, because he often uses purples and odd shades and stripy things. And when you actually take the color away, I think that aesthetic really works. You know, you've got these strange looking creatures.
Wow. Is it funny?
So Yazdi's looking at me.
Yeah, Yazdi's looking at you strange.
Big grin on his face.
You are finally recognizing the genius.
Perhaps I am, I think.
Maybe I need to make you watch Nightmare Before Christmas again.
I need to be eased into the Tim Burton fan club.
No, I really, really want to see this. And, you know, I just about love every dog more than most human beings. So, I have a greater affinity for this material. So I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, you know, I think the aesthetic, again, works very well in animation and not so much in live action where you have, you know, spiky hairdos and whatnot. Here, the kind of the weirdness plays to the movie's overall texture.
And again, it's doing really well on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, it's carrying 86%.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, the 3D I thought was actually worthwhile here. It's very subtle. There's not lots of things flying at you. Again, I think the only real criticism I had with the way that the movie looked was this constant sense that you're inside a cardboard box. You know, I never felt as if any of the outdoor environments were truly outdoor. And that was off-putting at times because, you know, there were a couple of kind of big vista-type things that they tried to imbue on us, but it didn't... I never bought that, so it felt very... I think it was most at its most comfortable in the interior environments, and that looked right. You went outside, and I just felt claustrophobic in a weird way.
And, you know, to Joe's credit, I do agree that, I mean... As much as I like Tim Burton, I absolutely hated Alice in Wonderland. And I know what Joe means. Sometimes he gets so carried away with the visual look that he forgets the emotional content of the movie. And then it just becomes like a yowza factor. And I don't want to see psychedelic stuff for 2 hours.
Right.
And so I think when he has emotionality behind it, I think those movies work better. And I wonder, regarding your second point, Joe, I wonder... whether it looks like it was in a cardboard box because, you know, this is stop motion animation. So it was probably difficult to do it, knowing how time intensive it is to do it in the outside where, you know, the weather's changing, the sun's moving from one end to the other and shadows are being cast and so forth.
Stop motion can be faked. I mean, you know, Wallace and Gromit movies are done stop motion and they're done, you know, they have these external environments and they work well. I think the real problem, and sorry if this sounds a little technical, but it was the fact that they used a 3D camera and, you know, if you've seen Hugo, for example, the field of view, the kind of the width, the amount of scene that you can cram into the frame in a 3D camera is limited because you have to have two cameras overlapping at certain points. And so that narrows the kind of the left to right expanse that you can fit into the frame. And I think when you're doing stop motion with much smaller cameras, you end up with that problem amplified. So it was more like the camera angle never felt like it was wide angle. It always felt very constrained. And that's what I think led to the claustrophobia, not necessarily the fact that there were fake walls on the side or anything like that.
So I was going to say, Joe, this is difficult subject matter. You know, this is a kid losing its dog. And I guess the fact that it's pseudo animation is going to be a kid's movie. Does it play well as a kid's movie?
I was looking at that because I felt like the themes here were somewhat adult, but there was enough here for the kids. The younger kids seemed to enjoy it. They all sat there kind of quiet. It is, I believe, a PG-rated movie, and I think that's because it does have themes of death. But I think it's not one that I would tell parents not to take their kids to. I would say, you know, go see this movie. Know that it's not a lot of jokes. There's not a lot of gags. There's not, you know, cartoon slapstick humor and fun to be had here. But the kids seemed very entertained, even the youngest of them. I mean, I think the biggest challenge for parents actually is going to be, you know, if they go home and Fido actually does die, that, you know, the kid's not going to try and stick his tail into the electrical outlet to try and revive him.
All right, so sum this up and score it.
I think I've said it all, really. This has a very nice visual presence. I enjoyed looking at the movie as I did watching it. But, you know, I was immediately drawn into the story and, you know, I connected with it. Again, it's not high amplitude emotion. I think everything here is quite subtle, but I've thought about the movie more than once since watching it. So for me, it's one of Tim Burton's better movies. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Wow.
Yes, you can pick your jaw up now.
I know. Now I want to rush out and watch the 10 p.m. showing. Go on.
I know. I want to do Frank and Weenie followed by Looper.
The fact that the dog's called Sparky is just...
I know. It's really cute.
Lovely. But, yeah, I'm surprised.
I mean, say thank you, Yazdi and Rashmi, for making me go see this one.
But no, I've still got my bones to pick with you about that, but I'll forgive you. I won't thank you. I'll forgive you.
Okay. We can live with that, can't we, Yazdi?
Yes, we'll make do.
All right. Well, mail at movierollers.com. Let us know what you think of these movies if you've seen them. Facebook.com/movierollers. Follow us on Twitter as well. We're not tweeting too much these days, but you'll get instant notification when one of our podcasts comes out. So until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. Good night from me.
And me.
Me as well.